life, I plan not to be on this corner. I still want to see California, but this is my world.
Welcome to the It's Your World podcast, presented by Team Media. For more information about the team, visit our website, www.theteam.media. Or on social media, we have new handles, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, now at Your Team Take. This show is also available on your favorite podcast streaming service, including iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Amazon, and so many more. For this edition, I definitely want to talk about the election being less than a week away, but I want to start with a special segment, a quick break, and then we'll jump right into it.
If you're worried your friend may be struggling, remember, you don't have to be there to be there.
You could say how while you will get a fake tattoo. You could ask with an app if it works for you. You could chat on the game, kick off your flip-flops. You could ask on your couch while you binge watch.
Whatever gets you talking.
Reach out to a friend about their mental health. Learn how you can help at seizetheawkward.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Why was the basketball court all wet?
Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and for so many, a time to reflect on how this horrific disease called cancer has impacted our lives. The Susan G. Komen Foundation, which is dedicated to the fight to expand breast cancer awareness and has partnered with many, many of the top research, sports, social, and community organizations, releases annual statistics related to the disease, and for 2020 projects that over 276,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year, and that over 42,000 women will die from the disease. Amongst men, yes, men can get breast cancer too, over 2,600 diagnoses and over 500 deaths. They will also list something that's called a 5-year breast cancer specific survival stat, which looks at the percentage of people who survive the disease beyond 5 years of their initial diagnosis, rather they are at stage 1, 2, or 3. Those at stage 1 have a 98 to 100% rate of survival. Stage 2 has a 90 to 99% rate of survival. And those at stage 3 have a 66 to 98% rate of survival. Now, there are several factors that drive these rates, including how early a diagnosis is made, the stage at which it is diagnosed, the type of cancer, and treatment plan undertaken. If you'd like to learn more about these stats, I'll post the link to the Susan G. Komen website where they're posted, and you can read the data for yourself. I point this out to say early detection and treatment is the key. This month also causes me to think about people I know who have been personally affected, some classmates, some friends, and some family. I have suffered two very personal losses due to breast cancer. One in my grandmother and another in my mom. Both losses have cut me very deeply. You know, the kind of cut that you don't notice right away, but it tends to wound you profoundly. If I may, I'd just like to take a few moments to talk to you all about my mom. In April of 2010, my sisters and I learned the news that my mom's cancer had returned for something like the third time. Her first two battles were courageous, and we saw her undertake a lot of lifestyle changes, like running, watching how she cooked and ate, and even see her take up a vigilance of sorts in learning about different health foods and supplements. Every opportunity she got, I can remember her trying to get me to drink some colon cleanser powder that looked a bit like Metamucil and not the clear kind. She would also get various juices from the health food store. I can remember one which was a cranberry juice that was not like the ones you buy in a supermarket and was so tart and bitter, it would make you speak in tongues. I'm only slightly kidding. With each bout, she struggled through a realization of her waning mortality and yet also an optimism to make the most of her life, however much of it God would allow her to have. She would prepare my sisters and I for the eventual day that she would leave here. But I don't think any of us took those comments as more than the expressed concerns of someone who just underwent the terrifying and taxing process of chemo and medicine regimens and lifestyle overhaul. At the end of the day, she'd be fine and we'd be there to support her. In April of 2010, that all changed. She was a little older now, a little more battle weary, and did not want to endure another round of chemo and med regimens and worry. She had fought all she could and decided she wasn't going to fight anymore. It was a decision we all tried to wrestle her away from and then needed to wrestle with within ourselves. But this was her choice. Not long after, she was placed in hospice care and decided she wanted to spend her final weeks or months around her family. If you've ever had to care for an older loved one, you already know how difficult a decision it is now to try to arrange your life around this person's care. Even the prospect of placing them in a home or hiring a caretaker can be costly. For our family, all of us with full-time jobs of our own, and others who lived a distance away, we decided to make the adjustment as best we could as a family. For me, it meant leaving my job in New York at the time. For my sisters, many sacrifices in other forms. But this is our mom. Anyway, the first few weeks at home with my mom filled me with a sense of gratefulness, concern, weariness, and regret. For whatever reason, it was the first time I could recall sitting down with this woman and taking some time to get to know her. I mean, she cared and reared me my whole life up to that point. I was good at asking her for favors or getting her dating advice, and especially good at letting her down. But I never actually stopped and asked the question, "Who are you?" There is a similar regret that burns in me from the loss of my dad, but I'll save that for another post. Anyway, I got the opportunity to get to know her and her life, hear stories about how she met my dad, hear her talk about her dreams, both for herself and her kids, and also hear her tell me stuff I didn't ask her, such as what she thought about the women in my life at the time. Those conversations were filled with many jokes and laughs and even some tough truths, but she laid her heart out for me. And even now, as I think about it, it brings a tear to my eyes. So yeah, I was grateful to have the time with her. My concern was caused by how fast she seemed to deteriorate. In a 2-week span, she literally went from being able to get up out the bed and use the bathroom on her own to needing help to do everything. It sometimes felt like every overnight brought another loss of her ability to do something. until she could no longer even talk, raise her hands, or breathe. Weariness sets in when you need to care for someone 24 hours a day. And although my sisters and I took shifts and did the best we could to make sure one of us was always with her, it's a weariness we all felt and shared. They had to remind me sometimes just to go outside. And even when I did, I probably rarely made it further than the front porch. By this time, you're waiting for something, either God's healing or his chariot. She was clearly transitioning and seeing visions of things to come for us and herself, things I won't share here. She was reconciling things from her past, moments I had no reference to or understanding of, but I just had to be physically present with her as she worked through those moments. She also talked a bit whenever she could about the Bible, the Word of God. Even if she could only whisper it, she wanted me and us to know the Word of God was a comfort to her in those last days. Anyway, in August 2010, she finally went home to be with the Lord, and a few of us were with her when she took her last breath. I have never shared what I'm getting ready to say with anyone, but there are parts of me that took a last breath of my own right then too. There was a regret because in my 30 years of life, it took the prospect of her death before I decided to take time to get to know her. And once I did, I understood her so much more deeply, had an even greater respect for her, and realized I missed so many opportunities to grow even closer to her. I regretted spending so much time traveling the world and coming to know so many people who I thought were important, and not enough time getting to know the most important one of all. I regret that she didn't get a chance to meet my wife, that the kids we one day have will never meet her, and frankly, that there are so many questions I never got to ask, for which I wish I could just pick up a phone right now and call and ask her. So you're probably wondering, why am I telling you all this? And no, it's not to make you sad, but rather to impress on you to not take for granted the people in your life whom you profess to love, to take an opportunity to get to know them, to drink a cup of that nasty colon cleanser or cranberry juice if they ask you to. But above all else, to tell them you love them and to ask them all those silly little questions you want while they are still around to pick up their phones. For those of you dealing with breast cancer, you will hear a lot of messages this month telling you to fight. And yeah, that's important. But my message to you is also to remember to live, because that's the whole purpose of your fight. Okay, a quick break, everyone. Keep it tuned here.
Social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Why was the basketball court all wet?
Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school? Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
We are in the home stretch in the lead up to the 2020 election, And the Associated Press recently reported that some 58.6 million people have already voted, which surpasses the early voting numbers from 2016. Way too early to tell if voters are voting according to party or if they're breaking ranks on one or some candidates. What we do know is that there's a lot of energy surrounding the 2020 races, and it appears this is translating into higher voter turnout. 35 Senate seats up for grabs, with Republicans currently in control of the Senate by a measure of 53-45-2 over Democrats and independents. Of the 35 seats up for grabs, 12 are currently held by Democrats and 23 by Republicans. There are also 8 special elections for U.S. House of Representatives seats in congressional districts in California, Maryland, 2 in North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, New York, and Georgia. There are also 13 gubernatorial or governor's races this election cycle, with offices in American Samoa, Delaware, Indiana, Missouri, Montana, New Hampshire, North Carolina, North Dakota, Puerto Rico, Utah, Vermont, Washington, and West Virginia all at stake. 10 of the 13 races involve an incumbent or current governor running for re-election. There are also a host of other races for state executives, judges, school boards, and mayoral races. One mayoral race I have my eyes on is happening in my home state of New Jersey, in the town of Atlantic City, as the incumbent, Marty Small Sr., looks to fight off the challenge of Republican Thomas Forkin. We personally know Marty and commend him on the job he is doing to not just fix the many, many issues of Atlantic City, but lay a groundwork for a successful future. And we hope the citizens of Atlantic City will reward him with more time to finish the work he has started. You know, guys, I typically try to stay away from candidate endorsements, but I'll make an exception for Marty. Go vote Atlantic City. Another endorsement we have made involves the San Ramon, California City Council District 1 seat, where we are supporting Luz Gomez, who I was honored to have as a guest on our last broadcast. So with all of this, we have not even touched on the various state and local ballot measures or propositions being decided. And we don't have time to touch on them here, but there are some 120 state measures covering a range of topics, such as stand your ground laws. There's 4 states that are voting to legalize recreational marijuana use and possession. 12 states have tax reforms on the ballot. And then there is my resident state of California, which has some 12 propositions on the ballot. Yes, I said 12. You've heard me talk on a previous episode how commercials started airing in the spring and have only ramped up from there. Every other commercial is about one of these propositions. Check your mailbox recently. It is likely flooded with election propaganda there too. I read that Colorado has about 11 state measures as well. And this all doesn't count the various local ballot measures specific to certain counties or districts. I say again, there's a lot going on this election cycle. You can literally wake up on November 4th and arise to a different world than it was when you went to sleep. Yeah, there's a bit of hyperbole in that. But regardless of how this election turns out, there will be joy and bitterness that will need to be balanced so that we can again function as a country. I have been thinking a lot about the blessing and curse of election seasons. On one hand, we are blessed to live in a country that allows its citizens to choose who their elected officials are. Also, at least for the most part, elections here in the U.S. have been safe and fair, especially as compared to what happens in many other countries around the world, where election corruption seems normal. Over the past few decades, though, that whole fair part has even begun to come into question here in the U.S., with redistricting, redlining, voter fraud, and voter suppression each becoming controversial topics and/or tactics used more frequently to help sway elections. Also, elections are just big business. The AP reported that just between the presidential, Senate, and House races this year, an estimated $11 billion, yes, that's with the B, will have been spent, which not only includes the money raised by candidates, but also any donated by political action committees, also referred to as PACs or super PACs. Why are they spending so much money? Well, the simple answer is to get your vote. The more complex one involves an intricate web of greed involving media companies, advertising firms, special interest, and a whole host of other unsavory people. So really, it's not just about your vote, but for some, control and influence over something greater. That $11 billion doesn't even include the money that goes into other state races and ballot initiatives, which might easily double the figure. Considering this, I can't help but to think that there must be a more cost-effective way to do this election thing. I would by no means support any effort to make voting more complicated, but neither more fraudulent. I would just like to see money have less of an influence on the outcome. As voters, your choice on an issue, especially one you are not familiar with or educated on, can sometimes come down to whose ad you see first or the most, or even by who is supporting it. If you don't have the budget for a lot of prime airtime or a name to put behind your issue, voters may never hear your position. And I just don't think it should come down to this. But there are a lot of people and businesses benefiting from this current structure, and it will be hard to convince them to ditch this current model in favor of something different. Another curse, if you will, I see, is in how divisive politics has made us as Americans. The terms Democrat or Republican says more to other people about you than being described as peace-loving or a violent murderer. People will almost accept you being a murderer as long as you vote as they do. To some, symbols like the American flag, which have long stood for freedom around the world, have come to now stand for racism by others. And unlike many public opinions, I don't necessarily blame certain candidates for this. Candidates tend to reflect the core values of the people they represent. The election overall is a game whose objective is to secure more people to vote for you than opposing candidates. It's less ideological, such as the difference between a candidate who supports brand A versus one who supports brand B, but instead is one where a candidate can support brand A and the other, recognizing a large contingent of voters who don't, instead wages a war against brand A, but not necessarily supporting brand B, all to secure votes. That leads to a fundamental problem I see in politics, the two-party system. This alone probably deserves an episode of its own due to how robust of a topic this is. But I do understand that the premise behind a two-party system is to prevent the chaos that would ensue from having 10 or 20 or 40 candidates running for one office. Can you imagine having to sift through that many candidates just to find one who matches your views perfectly? I mean, a version of this happens during the primaries, and you see how chaotic that is sometimes. And what if your thoughts change? Does it automatically change your preferred candidate? I think the key to changing how we as Americans vote lies in changing what we ask and expect from politicians. Again, I'll save this all for another episode. The point I'm getting to here is that our political process is broken, and we need to begin an honest conversation on how we are going to address the issues and fix them. Because on the course we're headed, we're moving further away from equitable policy construction and closer to civil combustion. This is not said to discourage anyone from voting, although I know it's a strongly held opinion by many these days who see the election as less about democracy and more about leveraging popularity for power. No, please go vote if you have not already done so, because it matters. But take it one step further. And don't just vote, but unite to help hold leaders accountable. And that's even if your preferred candidate doesn't win. For too long, political parties have been running the country, not the people. This is why many have felt voiceless or ignored for so long. Forced to choose between candidates who support one or a few things they may agree with, but may differ on opinions regarding other moral or social concerns. Parties are interested in the issues that can win them votes, not necessarily justice or equality. But we can begin to change that by using the very process we look to change, voting. And I have some ideas on how we could begin to do this, and I'll share them on a future edition. But for now, please go vote, not just for president or a senator or a governor, but also for city council, school board, trash commissioner, and anyone else running. Also, vote on ballot measures and propositions and know how you're going to vote in advance. Vote according to your heart and not your party. And remember that the more you vote, the more power your vote wields. All right, a quick break and then some closing thoughts.
Why was the basketball court all wet?
Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school? Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
So that's going to do it for this edition. Please let us know what you thought of this broadcast. Leave us a message on our website, www.theteam.media, or on social media at our new handles, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, now at Your Team Take. We'll be back with a special election recap on November 4th, so you will not want to miss that. I'll be at the polls on election day doing my civic duty, and I'll probably see some of you out there. If you've already voted, thank you. If you're planning to vote early or on election day, prepare yourself for long lines. And if you're thinking against voting, go vote anyway. It's important and it matters. Until next time, remember, be good to yourselves and each other. Peace.